Yeah, my name is Menachem Goldberger. I'm a Rav here in Baltimore for about 26 years. Originally from Denver, Colorado, came here in 1986. And our topic for the day is to talk about Gerus and the process of Gerus, which when you're in Rabbanus and specifically, you will come across very, very often. And certainly in Kiruv, some do and some don't. It kind of depends on what kind of outreach that you're doing. But regardless, it's something that will most likely come your way if you're working out there with Kalal Yisrael. So I have several points I wanted to discuss, and then as I'm moving ahead, I'll stop once or twice during the course of what we're talking about to get some questions and some conversation too. In the Megillas Rus, we know, of course, that Rus Hamoavia is a famous Gioris, probably the most famous Gioris in history, and she's also the forerunner of Mashiach Tzidkenu. So the famous scene in Megillas Rus, a very moving scene, and Rus is talking with her mother-in-law Naomi, and they're about to part company because Naomi is going back to Eretz Yisrael after being outside of Eretz Yisrael for quite a long time. And Ruth and Orpah are there with them, and Naomi kind of urges them to go back to their families. And Orpah does, as we all know. And then there's the following conversation that occurs between Naomi and Ruth. Vatoma Ruth altif ki'ivi. Ruth says to Naomi, don't press me to go back. La'azveich, to abandon you, lashuv me'acharayich, and to leave you. Ki al asher telchi eilech, where you walk, I will walk. U'ba'asher tolini olin, where you sleep, I shall sleep. Ameich ami ve'lokayich elokoi. Your nation is my nation, and your God is my God. Ba'asher tamusi amus, v'sham ekover. As you die, I shall die, and there I will be buried. Ko yasa Hashem, so may Hashem do, li to me v'chol Yosef, and so may he increase. Ki hamoves yafrid beini uveinech, because only death will separate between me and between you. Very moving words. And then the Navi says, rather the Megillah says, that Naomi sees ki misametzes hi lalechas ita, that Ruth is very strong, right? Misametzes. She's going to go with her. She made her point. Vatechta ledaber eleha. So Naomi discontinues speaking to her, meaning trying to dissuade her. She tried, and now that was it. So there's a lot of halacha that comes out of here, as we'll see. Now, first, a very important Rashi. Rashi says from the phrases which Ruth says to Naomi, we can grasp what the topics of discussion were. So it was more than just, you know, very beautiful language, where you walk, I shall walk, where you sleep, I shall sleep. There was something going on with this phraseology. So Rashi says as follows, Mikan Amu Rabboseinu Zal D'Chachamim, say from here, Ger Shabo L'Hisgayer, a person who's coming to convert, Modim lo miksas onshim. You let them know some of the onshim, of the consequences of if they don't abide by the Torah. Shim bo lachzor bo yachzor. If they choose to return and not to persist in this way, then they'll return. Go back to their previous way. Shemitoch devorim shorus atolomeid ma sho amra lo Naomi. Through Ruth's words, you can see what Naomi had told her. So, for example, Naomi says to Ruth, "Aser lanu letzeis chutz li tuchum b'Shabbos. We're not allowed to walk outside of tuchum Shabbos. So that's 2,000 amos outside of the boundaries of the city. You can't go past that." Omar le, Ruth said back to her, "Basher telchi elech, where you walk, I will walk." So that's what she's saying to her. I'll abide by tuchum Shabbos. I can keep that. Aser lanu lehisyache. We're not allowed to be alone, secluded. Nikeva im zocher, a female with a male. She'eno isha, which is not her husband. She's telling her the laws of Yichud. Amrullah ba'asher tolini olin. The way you sleep, I will sleep. She's makaba. Imanu, I'm sorry. Amenu muvdalim mishar amen b'sheish meyos v'shosh esrei mitzvahs. Now she says in the broader sense, our nation is different than any other nation. We have 613 mitzvahs to do. So Ruth says, Ameich ami. Your nation is my nation. She accepts. Asur lanu avodas elilim. We're not allowed to worship idols. Ruth says, Elokayich Elokai. Your God is my God. Arba misos nimsaru lebeistin. There are four different types of capital punishment that the Torah can impose upon somebody for various serious averos. So Ruth says, Ba'asher tomusi amus. As you die, so I shall die. She accepts that too. Shnei kvorim nimsaru lebeistin, echelen niskolim v'nisrafim, v'echelen aragim v'nachnakim, amra lahem v'sham ekavir. There are even separate burial places for people who were killed by Beistin. They can't be buried in a regular cemetery. They have to be buried in a place where these are the people who were stoned. These are the people who were strangled. So she says to them, you know, the Shem Ekaver, there I shall be buried. So in the context of this conversation, we can see a lot as to what Naomi was telling Ruth and what Ruth was responding to her. And then when she persists, Naomi sees that she persists, and she backs off. Okay, you can come with me. Now, we have that process, right? We have that process in halacha, and that is that when a ger, or a potential ger, first come to try and become a ger, that you have to push them away. So what does that mean, to push them away? They come in, you throw them out the door. They say, get out of here, I want to talk to you. It sounds like very strong language. It doesn't mean that. So I'll tell you how I do it, and each person kind of develops their own style. This usually has to come from a Rav, because people are coming to a Rav to talk about this. So, yes, yes.
Before you go on,
yeah, please.
Two questions.
Yeah.
So first of all, the notion that we don't learn halacha from Tumah is not correct?
It's correct in the general sense. In other words, that we can see a remez to halacha from this.
Okay, so the halacha that you're quoting is actually based on a pasuk. It's not an original halacha.
Right. Yeah, okay. That's right.
And when you say kishal in talin, so then what's going on when she sends her to Boaz?
Well, that's a very difficult question in Navi. I think it's kind of outside of the spectrum of this.
Okay.
It's a great question, and it's one of the most difficult part in Megillath Ruth, what that was about, that she had to go to him late at night when nobody's around. It's a very mysterious scene. So let's leave that for that class. But it's an important topic. Okay. But I guess certainly you could see how much Ruth trusts Naomi, because even when she is sent into a situation which certainly from the outside is very questionable, she does what she says. So that reflects her trust in Naomi. Okay, so I'll tell you what I do in general when someone comes to talk about conversion. I first ask them about their lives, what's going on with them, what brought them to this point in their life, just to get the general idea, see where they're coming from. And then, in the course of the conversation, I will say to them with complete seriousness, because I mean it with complete seriousness, that have you ever considered being a righteous Gentile? Have you thought about being a righteous Gentile? So some already know what that is, and they say, yes, I thought about it. I don't want to do that. I want to be Jewish. Depends on where you are catching them. Other people will say, can you explain that to me? So I talk about the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. You're not allowed to kill, you're not allowed to commit adultery, you can't steal, etc. And if you lead a moral, ethical life, which is what the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach are, then you are in very good standing with God. You don't have to become a Jew. Because remember, we don't push this on anybody. That's not where we're coming from. Just a second. So you have to really let them know that this is absolutely beseder for them to be a righteous Gentile. And it is. It is beseder. So when I use those words in all seriousness, this is not for me a routine conversation, and this is not just a token conversation. I'm dead serious, and they know it.
Have you ever had somebody accept us
then? Yes, I'll tell you about that in a minute. So I'll then like say it again. Like, for example, if somebody says, yes, I've read all about that. I knew I was going to be dissuaded when I came to you. People told me about that. But I have to be omed on our position and say, understand, what I'd like you to do is take a little time and think this over. Just take some time and think about it. Maybe you could be a righteous Gentile. You don't have to become a Jew. And that's as far as we go. And then they go. In terms of your question, most of the people who I have dealt with over the years do come back. But it's not an insignificant minority of people who don't. It's not. It certainly happened to me several times that someone will come back and say, I think I'm just going to continue the way that I was going before. I appreciate that you let me know about being a righteous Gentile. I knew about it, but I didn't know it was really such an important thing. I've had that before. I've had people never come back after that conversation, and maybe they went somewhere else, and maybe they just went on to live their life. I had someone come back to me several months later and said, remember that conversation that we had? So I said, yeah. And I decided that I'm just going to be a righteous Gentile, and I thought I should tell you that. I said, no, thank you for following up. Most of the time, I'd say it is the rove, certainly in my experience, people will come back. And they want to take the next step. All right, so before we get to that, Panina, wanted to say something? Please.
My observation has been, and my background is part of that, is that it depends on where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. Because if they were very strong Christians who have now rejected their faith, they're used to this idea of a congregation and a community of some sort and worship being a central part of their life. And unfortunately, I don't know who's to blame, and I'm not putting any blame. Noahide movement does not have enough of that for them, and it's not enough. And so they feel like there's no sense of community. If I got a bunch of people together, what are we going to sing about? We'll just sing hymns that don't have his name in it. But, you know, like they just don't know what to do with themselves. Right. And so it's the ones with the strong Christian background, I think, that are most driven to go all of the way.
And they want a community.
Yeah, they want community. Mm-hmm. And they need also that God is in every part of their life. They need the ritual also as part of, you know, making life
meaningful
for them.
I certainly have had people like that who come from a strong Christian background and want something of community within the Jewish framework. And I've also had people who don't come from that kind of background, and they just ended up through their long journey in life wanting to become a Jew for, you know, any number of reasons. You know, it could really, each story is kind of unique. Okay, did you have a question as well? That we got your question.
I was going to say something along the same lines. Mm-hmm. Is that it's being Noahide is actually hard work.
Yeah.
For your average secular non-Jew out there, and I wanted to pose the question: if you thought you would find more people who are more satisfied with that solution, if they actually had. Because you have to really learn from a rut.
Connect with people, right?
You also have to learn from a rut.
Right.
You can't learn from a non-Jew who doesn't know what they're doing.
Right.
And I believe that, I think if I'm wrong, I think Atlanta has a community of.
There is one, Noahide community. I don't know where it is, but there is a community.
I thought it was in Atlanta through Rabbi Feldman.
Okay. Yeah, it could be. I don't know.
It could be. There's virtual stuff. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff on the internet, but not a lot
Nothing,
of
but no congregation.
Right.
And that's what was very interesting to me, was that I always wondered if that would be. If you felt in your experiences that if that had been a more viable option, you know, if the people who didn't want to go all the way would have also been that instead of Christian or instead of nothing or instead of holistic.
Right. I never really pursued it.
No.
You know, it's all really to me individual cases, people who've come forward and dealing with them as an individual as opposed to kind of looking at the whole thing and maybe there's somewhere they could go. Sometimes someone will ask about that.
And nobody ever came back and pursued it with you?
To be a Noahide with me? No.
Yeah. Interesting.
That never happened.
Interesting.
They either turned away or they went on the path to become Jewish. Yeah.
Really interesting.
Uh-huh.
I always wondered why.
Yeah. I think that once that desire to become Jewish within that person has kind of been settled, and they don't want it anymore.
They try that and they go their way.
Right?
I hope they don't Oprah.
Yeah. Yeah, please.
So we have a similar situation. That's a little bit. People get insulted because they're kind of being pushed away,
sure.
And then do the opposite. You know, they want to become Jewish, and now they feel negative.
Oh, sure.
Towards Jews,
that I don't know, because that would require some more long-term follow-up. But I've had people who were extremely disappointed with that conversation, because sometimes they come in and they think like they're doing the greatest thing in the world, and maybe they are. So to be turned away is like, how could you possibly do that to me? Right? I want to be a Jew. I want to be a member of your people. How can you turn me away? So yeah, I will get that, but you have to stand very firm, because that excitement will go away. You know, it will go away after a month, after 2 months, after 3 months, and it does. And they're coming in, and they're really flying very high on the way in the door about what they want to do. It's often very temporary. So that sobering moment is really a good thing. It's a good thing. Yeah, please.
Halakhically, do you need to turn somebody away?
Yes.
Like, there's so many families that I could think, like, you don't know, like, is it Orthodox? Like, there's everything
right there. Right.
So I just, that's just an example. Let's say we run a Sunday school, the Jewish Experience. Mm-hmm. We have so many families that are mixed families, mm-hmm. where one spouse is not Jewish. Mm-hmm. We've been working for 10 years with them to get them, you know, to a point where they really are ready to convert.
Yes.
Who's turning them away at that point?
Yeah. All right, so let me talk about that for a minute, because it's one of the items I want to touch on today. So I'll go right to that. A couple things. So there's a really important psak halacha from Rav Yaakov Kamenevsky regarding a person who's Zera Yisroa. That means to say the mother is not Jewish, the father is Jewish. So they're halachically not Jewish. However, Rav Yaakov Kamenevsky, as Zatzal said, when it comes to a person who has a Jewish father and a non-Jewish mother, Zera Yisrael, you do not have to be doche them. You don't push them away. Halacha l'maisa, and almost, you know, everybody who I've met over the years in Rabbanus and in Kiruv, you know, goes with that. So you don't do that when there's Zera Yisrael. That was something that Rabbi Yaakov Paskin, and it was really very much accepted, you know, that psak halacha, certainly in Adam Gadol. So that situation where you are in a Hebrew school is going to come up a lot. And I know a lot of teachers who I talk with in Hebrew school environments have this. Either the mother's Jewish and the father's not, okay, the child's Jewish, or this one. So I tell them, go ahead. You don't have any reason to push them away. And as long as they're still interested, then you work with them. Now, what I will get to, but I'll get to it a little later, is this kind of situation when you're dealing with a family where someone's Jewish and someone else is not Jewish. Right? It presents a lot of complications, also a lot of potential as well. So I'm going to touch on that a little bit down the line. But that one nakud is really important, halachically. You don't have to push them away.
But yeah. One more
please.
To add to it.
Yeah.
Let's say the Sunday school, we get to a point where we have a bat mitzvah a year. And I've been running this program. This is the third year. The first 2 years, I refused to take non-Jewish girls. I just felt like it has to be Jewish girls.
Right.
You know? After 3 years, you could say maybe I'm getting watered down. I don't know where my hashgacha is going out the door. But this year, the third year, it's half non-Jewish.
Meaning to say a Jewish father and a non-Jewish mother?
Yeah, and we just had, there were like key families in the organization. We had no choice. It's very painful for me because here I am talking about Jewish continuity. I'm like, who am I speaking to?
Mm-hmm.
How could I teach them about marrying Jewish when like 70% is intermarried, mm-hmm. and 50% mm-hmm. of the girls are not halakhically
mm-hmm.
Jewish?
Wow, yeah. Well, that's a very serious question. You know, and it's a question about a particular community and what you need to do there. So I don't want to comment on that. That would be out of place for me. But I would say it has to be dealt with on a, you know, on a very real policy level in the community there, because that could really get out of hand. And these girls are not Jewish.
Right.
And they're becoming bas mitzvah. So are you going to make a bas mitzvah with them? How can you, right? They're not Jewish. So And then, of course, the mixing with other Jewish kids. So in my point of view, I would suggest pretty strongly that a policy has to be made for this situation. It would require a lot of deliberation with, again, Gedolei HaPoskim, because you run into all kinds of community consequences here, which you have to consider. And at the same time, at a very fundamental level, something's wrong here, which needs to be corrected.
They've had the same issue when the Russians came into Israel?
Yeah, major issue.
Policy there?
Yeah, well, they tried, you know, they tried to. And right now, Eretz Yisrael is filled with hundreds of thousands of non-Jewish Russians.
And there are rabbis who are pushing to make conversion easier just to get them officially Jewish, right. Just to deal with the problem.
Right, and in a certain way, you know, there's something to that. There's something to that on such a large scale. But that has to also be decided by very great people. That's an enormous question, an enormous problem. Yeah. Yeah, please.
I was going to ask you regarding that situation. Mm-hmm. Suspecting my answer is ask a Rav. But regarding what Rav Yaakov Kamensky said, is there an obligation at that point to Makarev?
You don't have to go out to be Makarev them. In other words, if you see that situation.
Okay, we're Makarev.
But if they come to you.
So they're in our house, okay. Already, and it's as much as we can, yeah. Filter, we filter.
Right.
And every now and then it's. We're pretty good at,
right.
And most people we've found that if you drop the ball, they roll away.
Yeah.
But and we do try and make a very clear distinction.
Right.
But sometimes you get that person who really, no, I'm Jewish. My mother's not, but I'm Jewish. And you know, I think when we had those situations, I think my husband was told to try and makarv them because they're going to marry Jewish, but not see themselves as Jewish. But I just wanted to hear what you had to say about it.
If they're coming forward already and they have involved themselves, then in my opinion, again, B'derech Klal in general, that you should work with them. If they have presented themselves that they're interested. But each and every situation, of course, is going to be different.
We have a girl who's dating, yeah. A professional football player. Mom is a professional football player right now. His dad is Jewish. His mom is not. She knows he's not Orthodox. But she's Jewish, and she goes, well, it's okay. He'll have Jewish kids.
Yeah, that's the heartbreak. That's the heartbreak of
the work that we
do. We're
pushing the whole football vibe right now. That's what we're pushing. Do you know what cheerleaders are like?
Yeah.
I know you said you're going to get back,
yes.
To this, but this was a question that,
yeah.
I had, so I'll just pose it.
Yeah.
In our situation, I'm Jewish, my husband wasn't. We came into the community, and somebody in the community said, oh my God, what do I do with these neighbors? They went to their rabbeim, who said, you've got a woman with four Jewish kids, try to get him to convert. Now, I don't know if it was because they saw the strength of our marriage and knew that trying to convince us to get divorced was like going to push me away, or I'm not sure what the reasoning was, but that was the advice, and obviously it turned out well, it doesn't always, but I would like you to like answer that question, which you said you were going to address a little,
yeah,
later.
And again, every situation is very different. There's no fixed answer to this. It depends on the family, where they're coming from, what's going on in that family, as we know. So I can't give a black and white, you know, answer to that question. It all depends on the circumstances. It really does.
Is there a Rav in America who is very good at answering?
In general, a lot of these questions would go to Rav David Cohen in Brooklyn,
To
Rav Shmuel First in Chicago,
To
Rav Yisrael Belsky in New York.
Okay.
A lot of those questions would go in the direction of those three. Poskim.
What's the name of the one in Chicago?
Of Shmuel First.
F-U-R.
R-S-T.
Yeah.
Could you give a little orientation to each one of those three so we would know why we would want to call one over another?
That would be really hard to do. they're all, you know, top flight, poskim, terrific, you know, human beings, and they're all available in terms of the shilas. You have to call at the right time, and you have to find out what their hours are, but they're all very good.
Rav
David Cohen has call hours every night, from every night 10 to 11. Rabbi First also is available at nighttime. And Rabbi Belsky, I'm not sure what his hours are. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Rabbi Shmuel Belsky is in New York. Yeah. Yes, please.
Another question.
Yeah.
So
So I have a lot of close friends now that have converted.
Mm-hmm. Halacha conversions?
So all across the spectrum. Mm-hmm. If someone has a halacha conversion, like it was under the Orthodox, mm-hmm. but in some hick town, you know, I don't know mm-hmm. who, but mm-hmm. and they don't take on Torah and mitzvahs, mm-hmm. is that an authentic conversion?
Okay, so let's talk about that. This is also very common in America nowadays.
Because we also have the parents. We have the children of those situations.
Right, the parents and the children of
them. We deal with a lot of Latins.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got that question probably once a week.
Okay. All right, so you have a situation like this. Let's start from this side of the spectrum. You have a halacha conversion, which was done properly. It's a proper base din, kosher mikveh. Okay, we're done. Everything's fine. Next situation, you move over. It was very common in America for many decades that within the Orthodox rabbinate that there were conversions done that in the Kabbalah HaMitzvot department, it was very schwach, it was very weak. So there are three conditions for Geirus. One, a person has to have Kabbalah HaMitzvot. They have to accept the Torah and the mitzvot. Two, they have to do that in the presence of a kosher Beis Din. That means three Orthodox rabbis. Three, they have to be tovel, they have to immerse in a kosher mikveh. Those are the three things. Now, where you have often this gray area in America is, was there a real Kabbalah HaMitzvot? The rabbis were Orthodox, even if it was very much on the modern side, but they were Orthodox rabbis. The mikveh was kosher. Kabbalah HaMitzvot, you can see from the life that they lead that they're not keeping mitzvot, and they never were. Right? So, a big question, you know, in our time for several decades. In general, I'll just say this in general. Most of the poskim of our time say that Geirus is sufficient and they're Jewish. So maybe you're thinking in your mind, how could that be? They're not keeping mitzvot. The reason is this. The criteria for Kabbalah HaMitzvot in the Shulchan Aruch is much less than you would think. Mm, wow. That concept of I'm accepting mitzvos, we think it means you're doing everything, right? It doesn't. L'chad chila, that's how it should be. That's certainly how I do it, and most of the Rabbanim line, that's how we do it. But l'chad chila, that's one thing. B'di'eved, what's a geirus? So Kabbalah HaMitzvot for a person who's with Orthodox rabbis, who basically accepts Torah and mitzvos, and basically keep Shabbos, kashrus, even kind of, but they get the idea. There's grounds to say in halacha that those people are Jewish, and it would be very remote for a posek to say those people are not Jewish. It would be very rare. So usually they have crossed the line into Judaism and they're kosher Jews. Does a child need to be asked in these cases? Sure, don't rely on what I'm saying right now. That's the general outlook of all of these situations over the past 50, 60, 70 years in America. Now, there's another point here. Let's say now one of those people has kids, and now those kids are pretty frum, as happens often. They go to day schools, went to Beis Yaakov, went to yeshiva, they're very frum. The parent's geirus is, you know, on the gray side, even though it's over the line. Now they're in shidduchim. So the people who are making the shidduch are making calls. I heard something about that geirus. You know, could you tell me something about that? Is that okay? So I get these calls a lot. Any rav gets these calls a lot. How's that geirus? Is it beseder? Can I rely on it? Or you have a girl, let's say, goes into seminary, or a guy who's in yeshiva, and then the principal or the menahel looks at their background and sees a geirus of this nature. And they'll often say to them, you know what? Your geirus is kosher. You're Jewish, definitely. We've asked the shaila before. You're going to be going out in shidduchim the next year or two. You better do what was called a giyur l'chumra. Right. I call it an upgrade. Right. Okay. It's a geirus upgrade.
For girls, it's easier then.
Yes, it is.
Because they just do it the night before they get married.
That's right. You can do that way as well. So Giyur L'chumra is to say this, that person, man or woman, and they're basically already completely Shomer Torah mitzvahs, they're from, that they are tovel in a mikveh, in the presence of a Beis Din, And they basically say a few words like L'shem Gerus, or they're doing it L'shem Yahadus, or they accept the Jewish everything about Yiddishkeit. It's a much shorter type of dialogue than the actual Gerus, which is a longer dialogue. And they tovel quietly, no shulah hate, nobody needs to know about it, and you do a gir l'chumra. I've done that many times.
Do you do it officially on paper?
Pardon me?
Do you do it
sometimes
officially?
Yes, sometimes no. Because if you do it on paper, then the people might think that the parents were not Jewish. It's sometimes better just to do it and not even write a shtar, not even write a ksav about it. Just let it be what it is. Because if you put a ksav out, you write a ksav that this person has converted, so what are you saying? That their parents aren't Jewish.
Right.
But they really are.
Right, right.
So you can't say that.
And what if she wants to marry Cohen?
Another problem. So, if it's a gir l'chumra, then truly a gir l'chumra, which is to say the gerus was truly kosher for her parents, you know, so most likely she's going to be able to marry a kohen. Would some people be machmir on that, or I should say nervous about that? Yeah, there would be some people who would be nervous about that. But mitzad hadin, most likely it would be okay. Again, every situation is different. So that's a gir l'chumra. And they're Jewish, but you really don't want to hold them back in terms of shidduchim. I had a young woman many years ago whose mother had a similar kind of conversion like that. She ended up engaged to a guy who was a skver chassid. So I got a call from skver. They said, can you tell me about her gerus? I said, and they said, that doesn't go by us, you know. You got to take care of that. She was from. Completely from. So we did a gir l'chumra for her.
The girl or the mother?
The girl.
Okay.
The girl. The girl who was the kala. So we did a gir l'chumra for her, you know, again, on the side, nobody needed to know about it, and they were fine. No, did not make a ksav in that case. Wasn't necessary. They didn't want it. They just wanted to make sure she had an absolutely kosher based in by rabbis with beards like this and did their, you know, did their thing proper. That's what they wanted.
Did you have to bring your beard hair out?
No.
Send a sample.
So, gir l'chumra is fairly common. In this situation, a lot of sensitivities here. A lot of sensitivities.
Can I ask a subtlety?
I'm sorry?
Sorry, I just wanted to ask a subtlety about that.
Yeah.
What if the woman is getting converted for marriage?
Mm-hmm.
But she's happy to be Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
But in her mind, when she's Kabbalist, HaMitzvos, she's going to keep what her husband keeps.
Mm-hmm.
So she's accepting the Judaism, but she's accepting the Judaism of her husband.
Right.
What would you say to that?
Well, it kind of depends, because the Rabbanim have to ascertain, is she really accepting Judaism, even though this is her way of doing it?
Right. But and she's saying yes to everything, and she's going to marry this guy.
Right, right.
And you know, but this is it. She's going to marry, and let's say he keeps
and she's
Shabbos
do
till Saturday afternoon. You know, she'll keep Shabbos till Saturday afternoon.
I see. That's a little more difficult. It might be okay, but again, if it is okay, it's just squeaking over the line.
But you know that she was sincere, like, you know, after the husband.
That's
was
the point.
Her,
that is
kept
the point.
Her way back to
okay,
shore.
That's the point. If you see someone who had a gerus, where their kabbalas hamitzvos was kind of shvach, you know, was weak,
right.
But you can see from their life that they became a serious Jew. So that means when they were makabla mitzvos, they really meant it in the real way, and that counts. So I've had that shaila many times. I've spoken to Rav David Cohen about this shaila many times. That a person who converted, and I'm gonna call it a modern Orthodox conversion, okay. Traditional Orthodox conversion.
Yeah, like there's
like
makeup on Shabbos, but like there's no turning on off and light.
Yeah, it's a basic Shabbos, but there are some things missing.
Okay.
Things missing. So, however, in that person's mind, that man or that woman, when they were doing that gerus, they were perfectly believing that this is the whole deal. And they are accepting Yiddishkeit as the whole deal. Even though it was chaser, but it was Orthodox, that is a kosher gerus.
Okay.
L'chad chila, the kosher gerus.
When you say tzvila l'knei bete,
yeah.
A gerus can go down for a woman.
No. Yeah, you want to know how a woman is tovel in the presence of three men? Yes? Okay, so let's talk about that. So it's a very, very big issue in terms of tznius, right? So this is how it's done. Even though I'm a little bit of the walking wounded here today, but I need to stand up to demonstrate this. Not okay, I just need to stand up. Okay. The Beis Din, hi.
Sorry.
Good to see you. The Beis Din itself, those three rabbanim, they have to see the person who is converting go under the water. If they don't see that, That's not a kosher gerus. Right? Now, there are some questions in halacha. If they're standing outside the room and the mikveh lady is there and she watches them and she says to them, she's down, she's complete. Once again, that's for Rav David Kahn, Shmuel first, that's for those great poskim, right? But that's not how it's done in the center to right of Orthodoxy. We don't do it that way. It's not lechadchila. So the rabbanim need to see that person going down. How do you do that with a woman? As let's say that's the mikveh. She goes into the mikveh. We already asked the questions that we need to ask. Do you accept one God? Do you believe in the Torah? Do you believe in the mitzvah? So you makabel all these things, etc. We've done that already. Now, we've done that in a separate room. She's dressed in a robe. She then goes with the mikveh lady to the mikveh room. We're standing in a different part of the building. She takes off her robe. She's unclothed with the mikveh lady. We tell her, go into the water and first practice a few times because your hair flows to the top. Your finger's going to pop out. Just practice a couple of times with the mikveh lady. It happens all the time. So, okay. Now we're going to come in and we're going to be standing like this. Right. So we're here and that table is the mikveh. And we want you to have your back to us. Right. So your back is to our back. And you kind of position her, have the mikveh lady position her. So this front wall of the mikveh, which could be fairly high, is shielding most of her body. So when she goes down, the mikveh lady is going to say, okay, she's down. We go like this and like that, and then we leave the room. In general, you see her probably from her shoulders and up, pretty much how it goes. So you can see that her head has gone under the water. You just make sure that she's blocked as much as possible. There are some people who will actually, some rabbanim who will kind of float a mat out on the mikveh, which will block most of her body as well, and she's on the other side of the mat. Rav Moshe Feinstein did not like that. He didn't like that for various reasons. We don't have a mesorah for that. You know, you just do it the right way. Don't start making, you know, shtick. Just do it the right way. Also with the mat, what has happened sometimes, because I've been at gerus like that the person, you don't see them at all. They go down and you look and all you see is a mat. So you know, you got to do it 3-4 times, it's not worth it. So you make sure to do it in that way that I described. And we always explain to her beforehand that this is what's happening, we need to do this in a way so it's a kosher gerus, l'chadchila. We need to see that your head is under the water completely and the rest of your body. So we're only going to see you from your shoulders and up as long as we do it in this way. And Baruch Hashem, that works out fine. We've never had any problem with that. And then once she's under the water, then we go outside the room and we say Mazel Tov from the hall. And then she comes out and gets dressed, and we give her her ksav for her gerus. So that's how that works, b'derech klal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was told that there are people, I guess, Gayim who view Kabbalah's Matan Torah and the way the Jews reacted afterwards as to how they react to their gerus.
Explain what you mean.
Meaning that just as the Klal Yisrael went through a gerus at Har Sinai,
right,
and then afterwards, you know, down to today, they're not also careful about all the mitzvahs they were mekabel at Har Sinai, mm-hmm. that's how, you know, when you ask a question of they get their gerus and then they don't keep the mitzvahs, mm-hmm. That they use us as an example.
I see. So, I really, of course, I would discourage that strongly because a ger has to go into this gerus, you know, with the intent that this is completely real and it sticks and it holds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, or another similar question. Hold on a second. You know, you're telling me that I have to convert and do all these things. I know so and so, right? They watch TV on Saturday.
Right.
They're Jewish. I can't do that? Nope. You cannot do that. I'm sorry. But they can. Sorry. They were born Jewish. They're still Jewish. They will always be Jewish.
They're happy to turn the TV on for you. And
even if they drop it. They drop the whole thing. They're Jewish. So you're different. You're trying to become Jewish. It's a different thing. In order for you to become Jewish, it has to be done in a certain way. So you can't take that as an example. Just by the way, another important halachic point. agir shechazar lesura, or lesura. If you have a gir who has a halacha conversion, it's right and it's kosher, and for whatever unfortunate reason, they go back to their non-Jewish ways and a non-Jewish life at a certain point, they are Jewish. It's considered like a Jew who has drifted. It does not possible, it does not invalidate the gerus. If the gerus was never kosher to begin with, okay, that's it never was good. But if it was good and they end up drifting, that's a Jew. Please. Yeah.
I can't remember. I may have missed
it. It's okay.
In our shul, we have a lot of we're converted, but are not Shomer Shabbos, never were Shomer Shabbos, don't keep kosher. I'm not sure why that was a policy we were used to before, and there were a lot of gerim like that as well. Mm-hmm. It was an Orthodox rabbi. I'm not sure what's the policy that one looks at people like this, or someone who was converted under a conservative conversion, but has been acting Jewish. Like, how does one look at gerim like that?
It was not uncommon in America for decades and decades to have that kind of gerus. It was very common that the Kabbalah HaMitzvos was very weak. And I did mention that with those, there are shilas that come out. As long as they've met the minimum requirements of a halachic gerus and Kabbalah HaMitzvos, they're going to be considered Jewish. The question is, did they meet the minimum requirements so that a posek has to say yes or no? But often, it's much less than you might think, and they are Jewish. So in America, it's a reality because there were so many garrison done like that for such a long time. Now, if you have a non-Orthodox conversion, conservative, reform conservative, that's not a garris, right? Halachically, that person is not Jewish. And this gets really sensitive because, believe me, they think they're Jewish and they're living a Jewish life. And what do you mean I'm not Jewish? I keep Shabbos, and often they do. I keep kosher. I go to the mikveh. Sometimes a very traditional conservative lady, she might go to the mikveh. I'm not Jewish. What are you talking about? But they're conservative, and they haven't gone further than that. So when you have to break the news to them, which needs to be done delicately, at the right time, at the right place, when they're further, far enough into this that you believe that they can handle this information, now it's time to say something. We have to redo your gerus. I've had very strong reactions to that.
What is the methodology missing?
Well, the problem is this, that it's not a kosher beis din. So one of the three conditions is a kosher beis din. Pretty much by definition, a conservative rabbi does not believe in Torah Shebaal Peh, by definition. So even if they, a little more or a little less, but the way the Torah requires us to believe in Torah Shebaal Peh, which is Mei Hashem, Mi Sinai, and it's just as important as Torah Shebichsav, those two things are hand in hand. They don't believe that. Beshita.
They think they can understand Torah Shebichsav without it?
Yeah, for sure. So that's a problem. That's a problem in a conservative based in that it's not a kosher based in. And therefore that gerus has to be done over again. And I've had conversations with people like this, and you can imagine how sensitive it is that they really have considered themselves to be Jewish for the past 10 years, and now you're telling them that they're really not and they need to have a gerus. You have to be as soft as possible, but at the same time to make it clear that it has to happen, and it can be a real difficult situation.
I'm sorry, can I say that my husband
got
stock from YU?
Yeah.
That some of the conversions that happened with conservative rabbis, like the 1960s, some of those conservative rabbis were actually Orthodox.
That's right.
And just worked at conservative shuls.
Right.
Did believe in Torah Shebaal Peh.
That's right.
He was told, look into every conversion,
that's
a
right.
conservative conversion, mm-hmm. as it is.
For sure.
Right.
In that era, that was also fairly common, that you had Orthodox musmachim who were working in conservative shuls. Nowadays, almost unheard of. But in those times, it was probably common. It was commonplace. So that kind of gerus could be kosher. Nowadays, you're not going to find that in the 1990s and 2000s. It's not going to happen. Yeah, pretty rare. Yeah, please.
What's with all the conversion reversals in Israel?
Conversion reversals?
Based in.
Yeah.
And then every convert that came out. Like, what's...
Yeah, it's such a difficult subject, and I can't tell you that I know the details of that case because I don't, but it was certainly in the papers this past year. that the Bate Din in Yerushalayim had a problem with some with an aspect of a Rabbanut type Gerus that they felt was not serious enough. They felt it was not serious enough to hold water. It wasn't. I can't even say it was against the Rabbanut, but certain types of Rabbanut Gerus, certain kinds, and meaning more specifically, certain people. So they didn't like it, and it got to the point where they said, like, no, we can't accept this. It might still be going on. I don't know. Did they ever resolve that?
My understanding was that there was a particular person that they didn't like.
Right.
And he had garrison for
like hundreds and hundreds of
it was many people.
And they retroactively puzzled all those garrisons so that people in Israel who've been living Shomer Shabbos for a decade.
Yeah.
Right. And their children now, if they were women, it's a problem.
Yeah.
Right. So how does that work halachically? How can you say that?
Well, that would mean, and again, I don't know the details, that those Bate Din came to the conclusion that those Gerusim were actually Pasul. So they had no choice but to say, we're sorry, you're not Jewish. You have to have a real Gerus. It can only mean that, because you can't invalidate a Gerus, which was a kosher Gerus. If it's kosher, it's kosher. So you can't undo it. It would have to mean that. If I knew a little more about it, I could probably speak more to the point, but I can't see it meaning anything else.
And therefore, any children that they had, well, they just thought they were Jewish, have to go through Gerus also?
It's possible that they do. It's possible, if that were to be the case. And, of course, that's horrible. You know, here's a kid who grew up going to day school, went from school, Beis Yaakov, Yeshiva, and all of a sudden, boom, they got to go to the mikveh to convert. Really,
are they contacting really the people hard. Who had it?
I don't know. I really don't know the details of the case in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. Yeah, please. Rachel.
I was wondering, so the people who find out that they're not Jewish, mm-hmm. can they opt out and do a Noachide? Like if they've been Jewish for decades and they tell them they're not, or do they have to convert?
If they're really not Jewish, like halachically not Jewish, they don't have to convert. It's up to them to do what they want. That usually doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. They want to be Jewish. They've lived Jewish. They want to be Jewish. Will they go through the Orthodox Gerus? Maybe yes, maybe no. Will they drift away from Yiddishkeit? I haven't seen it. They'll stay conservative. They'll just stay the way they are, you know, and they'll be okay in their community. And you don't accept me in the Orthodox community? Okay, you know, I'll just stay the way I am. Please.
Mm-hmm. There's people waiting for papers after conversion. What are they waiting for? It's not the Ksav, is it?
Like it would be the Ksav Gerus.
They're not getting a paper. What's that?
Say it again, people, what?
Sometimes even a year, they don't get the paper, and they have to wait and wait and wait.
There'd be no reason for that. I don't know why that would happen.
That's just like a backlog it doesn't have to deal with. If people want to make Aliyah, it seems that the paper takes a year, or if they want to get married, it takes a year before they can get their paper.
Never heard of that.
Never?
I don't know what that's about. Okay. Like, for example, when we do a Gerus, we give a person their Ksav right there. You know, before they leave the mikveh, we write it up. And we give it to them. Now, sometimes I want to photocopy it because some of the other rabbanim might want a copy of it for their own records, and I keep one for mine. So I'll show it to them. Here's your ksav, and I'm going to mail it to you, within the next week. But like a year, like I can't imagine why that would be necessary.
So they're not like holding it back for a final approval. This person isn't just running out and getting married to somebody, and that's why they. Okay.
I don't think so.
Unless they saw something about
that they really question.
But if they put them in the mikveh, they're Jews. They can't do that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And I just want to know if you could just touch on. Also, we talked about how, you know, getting pushed away, sometimes people get negative. But, like, how do we deal with everybody around us having all this negativity towards it?
I think it's really important to protect, in the positive sense, not in the defensive sense, to protect the integrity of Beis Din. And to say to people that these are people, you know, who are learned in Torah and in Halacha, and they absolutely understand the difficulties that arise from these cases, but their integrity is great, and they have to live by the principles of the Torah and conduct themselves in that way. And it has nothing to do with anything personal or political, because it really doesn't. And to really go with that in a strong way. Say, yeah, I know people are hurt. I empathize with you. It puts a lot of difficulty into your life. But they have to follow, you know, the principles of the Torah. And I'm proud that they are. Or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important not to slip into that, because the Beis Din is doing what it needs to do, al pi halacha. Yeah. Yeah, please.
This is a tangential, but I would just like to hear conversions. And the amount of women who think their mothers lit candles is tremendous.
Right.
And we happen to have a lot of Latin shuls, Moroccan shuls, Persian shuls. Mm-hmm. We have several shuls in the area that have a sign posted outside that no gerim are accepted.
They're Sephardic, probably.
They're Sephardic. Right. They're Syrian. But it's more than just a Syrian.
Well, the Sephardic community is...
It could be one Assyrian member in a Sephardi shul who convinces that congregation... That
in general, the Sephardic communities don't accept gerim.
At all?
Mm-mm.
Why not?
It's an internal edict
among
Sephardic Jews, which is very old. They don't take gerim.
But isn't that against the Torah?
Yeah, so they probably at a certain point in their history, which I don't know, probably had some really negative experiences with this on a very large scale, and therefore they said, that's it, we don't do this anymore.
But how come they won't accept it from anybody else?
I mean, if a proper gerus was done, let's say in an Ashkenazi community, by a proper Beis Din, I don't know. I wouldn't see why that wouldn't be accepted. That would be hard for me to see. But you're saying it even goes so far? Okay.
They're pretty religious that way.
My understanding is that the Syrian community made that edict to prevent interdating, because when they came to America, people were interdating, and they knew they could convert the person if they wanted to marry them.
Right.
So they said no converts, so that meant, don't bother interdating. You're not going to be able to convert this person. So no converts.
But that's not what
they felt that they needed
having,
to do that.
We have a large Latin population, and we've done several conversions, so it's something that, you know, we've tried to address in our own way. I just wanted to it can be very painful. It can be very, very, it can be a real slap in the face to the person who just said, hold on a second, you know, this is really something that I'm coming, how can this person judge my sincerity?
They don't convert Latinos either?
They don't convert anybody.
If you have children who are, you know, are the children of converts, they're not allowed in that congregation. It's that, I mean, don't set foot.
Yeah, so again, it's an internal thing. It's an internal decree that they made for their communities.
But it's not one shul.
And you may not be able to do anything about it.
Right.
If anything was to be done about it, it would have to be at a pretty high level. That you'd have to have some of the Rabbanim in the community, maybe some Rosh Yeshiva, who meet with the Sephardic Rabbanim and say, can we work this out?
Right.
It couldn't happen, you know, on a scale less than that, because they'd be all made on what their internal policies are. Right. Yeah. Yeah, please.
So I have a student that I'm working with now. Uh-huh. She's been on a journey to Judaism for 12 years. She's had already one conservative conversion.
How old is she?
In her 40s.
Okay.
She has two children, they're enrolled in a from school now, her house is kosher, they're in the Erev, she's ready to, I'm teaching her Taras Mishpacha, she's final, you know, they're nearly there, and she's going through an Orthodox conversion. She's being sponsored by some rabbis.
Mm-hmm.
She's a very sensitive person, and she calls me crying after every meeting, because the Rabbanim are just terrible to her. I don't know who the Rabbanim are, they're from another city. It seems to me like my pain for this friend is it seems wrong. Is that halachic? Is that what they need to do?
What's or are they just terrible to her?
I get crying people a lot too.
She's a very sensitive person, but the rabbi seems to ask her such hard questions. Like, you know, her husband is a pediatrician and he works on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, so you're not Shomer Shabbos? You know, he'll say, they're on a journey. They're not there yet. They're almost there.
Mm-hmm.
But he'll say such things, he said, would you let your son sit and learn? So she said, well, ideally, I'd like him to go to university. I mean, she's not coming from a learning world. And he would say, well, that's not acceptable. And things that, it's just, to me, I'm shocked.
A little too shocked.
Like, I don't know what to say, and I don't know how to support her.
Yeah.
But it seems a little bit not from.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I think in terms of supporting her, which is really important, I would just let her know, keep at it. Some rabbis are not sensitive. They should be, but they're coming across in a harsh way. It's probably just his personality. Should he be doing those things? No. But you know what? We probably can't change it. So go in there, brace yourself, know you're going to be asked some difficult questions.
Can we go with her?
And then come and talk to me when you're done.
Be able to go with her.
Conversations
come over.
Are on the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
Like she's been interviewed on
it's
the phone
too
a lot.
Bad. It's too bad. People sometimes have these experiences. It's really about sensitivity and people who are,
so
for whatever reason,
I
not trained.
Maybe it was, this is part of the whole thing.
No.
I know it's supposed to be difficult, but
no.
I'm thinking this is really not right.
Not at all. It's not meant
to
be like that at all.
Then?
It should be mentally.
Are they trying to push her away?
That's what I thought. I thought
no, once,
was,
you're, but once you're,
yeah,
trying,
but once
yeah.
you're in the
yeah.
process,
yeah.
that's
yeah.
not
yeah.
part of
the they wouldn't be doing that. There's never an excuse not to be menschlich, you know.
I have a question.
Let me, I just wanted to respond one more thing. So, like, firmness is one thing, you know, and to be clear is another thing. But to be menschlich, like, always. So it just sounds to me like there's a Midos problem.
Right.
You know, like there are, you know, unfortunately, in many places. And to kind of convey that to her, like, don't worry. Don't worry. It's okay. It's just, for whatever reason, that's the way he is. Let her cry on his shoulder and you know, help her feel better.
Right.
You know?
It'll be worth it when you get through it.
Definitely.
You're never going to have to deal with this guy again.
Right. Right.
But you're saying, and
right.
the integrity yeah. of that they did.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's where I get
halachically. Stuff. Halachically, you want to say that this is a halachically valid based in.
So
he's not treating you nicely.
Not
right. He does
he's
not have a good bedside manner.
But he's a great halacha.
Right. Right. So the, how could those two things go together? He's great in halacha. He has bad midos. Okay, we have a problem. Right? We have a problem. We're people. We have problems. And hopefully we'll get better. Bezras Hashem.
What
is it? Yeah, please. Yeah.
I've come across some cases of people who were Christians who had converted and still maintained their belief, and for whatever reason, the Beis Din didn't question them in just the right way to get.
They maintained a Christian belief.
They maintained
wow.
their Christian belief. Now there
wow.
was the Kabbalah mitzvot. You know, when they stood there, they said, "Yes, I'm going to accept all of the mitzvot. Absolutely, I'm going to live as a Jew. Absolutely." You know, they still believed in Yashka.
Mm-hmm.
That's not one God.
So
that's the problem.
Well.
It's more complicated.
So my question is, when I come across people who we're talking, they got the conversion, they converted, and I know for a fact, based on the statements that they're making, that they've been a believer for many, many, many years, because before they're not halachically Jewish, are they? Or are they?
They're not.
Totally
you cannot be a Jew and believe in Yashka at the same time as
obviously,
we.
Obviously, I understand.
Even though the Hebrew Christians insist that you can, right?
Gee, have you had a few of them?
You know, yeah, that's not a kosher. It's
right.
like
okay.
being Jewish and believing in Yashka is mutually exclusive.
Do I have an
proper.
Obligation then to do some research and find out who did the conversion?
In my opinion, yeah, you should. I mean, if it's really that
yeah.
clear that they still believe in Yashka,
can
they
celebrate Christmas?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's a very complicated
yeah,
question.
Absolutely.
Because most Messianic Jews don't celebrate Christmas
yeah.
anyway. But
yeah.
okay.
Yeah, absolutely. That's All a very right. serious issue. Yeah.
So that would just be, like, I guess, where the question is, what's my obligation?
I believe you do.
Okay.
Yeah. Mrs. Billy, question,
I'm just curious,
please.
What's
yeah.
the obligation of a city to have their own Beis Din? I mean, in Denver, it's so difficult for Garam because we don't have a Beis Din. They have to be shipped out or somebody has to be brought in.
Right.
Is there anything that, like, I understand it's a different situation today across the
yeah.
country, but
yeah.
it seems like a city like Denver should have a Beis Din, and that rabbis should say, okay, we're still smarting from 25 years ago, but
yeah.
it's time to start it again.
Yeah, it's hard to do. Should there be one? I couldn't say across the board yes. Like, for example, Baltimore, although there is a Beis Din in Baltimore, a central Beis Din, but not for Geirus. The Beis Din in Baltimore is for people who have litigation. So they have monetary cases in the Baltimore Beis Din, and it's an excellent Beis Din. All of the geirus in Baltimore is done by individual rabbanim who get together and make a Beis Din, and each one of us in rabbanis here will take on a few people depending on who comes to who and who's recommended to who. And then when we're ready, we'll call two of our colleagues and they'll join us and make a Beis Din. Personally, I'm happy it's like that in Baltimore. Because then I have the authority to do the gerus the way that I want to do it,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty strict. Whereas if you have a centralized Beis Din, then any rav who is part of that in general must follow the certain standards of the Beis Din. So in a city where the standards are very weak, that's a great idea. Because then no matter what, you know it went through the central Beis Din and the standards are good. And that's why... Let's say the OU and the RCA, why they want to see these things happen in cities across America because of lack of standards. In a community where the standards are very high, I wouldn't want to see it happen, personally. It would tie my hands in a certain way, and some other Rabbanim feel the same way. So it kind of depends on the city.
In Denver, yeah. We just have a policy of no Batidin.
Yeah. Don't do it at all.
There's right. No conversion in Denver unless you fly out or you fly the Av Beis Din
into Denver, right.
And then he'll pick two.
Right.
But no Denver rabbi will pick two of his colleagues.
So I guess they agree to that, and probably they could not come to a common standard that everybody would hold by.
Specifically with Garen then?
Yeah.
Specifically for Garrett?
For Garrett,
or for anything.
Yeah. So probably would have that.
When you say that my friend is being sponsored by an outside rabbi in a bigger community.
Oh, not in Denver.
No.
Right.
Oh. She lives in Denver.
But the Garris is through an outside rabbi. Okay.
All Garris is outside rabbis.
Okay.
Part of my understanding of why the RCA wants to have this policy is because there's so much pressure for rabbis within the congregation to convert people. Mm-hmm. And if they just say, oh, you're not ready, and the family's very rich, and they're putting on pressure, mm-hmm. you're going to say, listen, the RCA has objective standards, and I can't convert you because it's on their heads.
That's right. It takes the heat off of him in a really important way. Yeah. You know, and that's another good reason to have it. A lot of good reasons to have it. Just before I get to, I wanted to tell you one story because we're probably running out of time. What time do we have, Anita?
11:20
Okay, so I want to tell you a story. Okay, I want to tell you the story. I want to tell you two stories. All right, so I had a guy who was converting many years ago, and he was completely on track for Gerus, and he did everything well, and it was time to go through the Gerus. And I had one dilemma. He had a ponytail. But he was Shomer Mitzvos, and he lived in the community. One of our requirements is that they have to live in a frum community, in our community, for at least a year to go through the whole year of Shabbos, Yom Tov, family, see Judaism being lived, not just out of a book. So I really thought about it, and my conclusion was that I was going to proceed. Because I didn't feel it was an ikuv, I didn't feel it was a barrier in his Yiddishkeit. It was his personal thing. He wanted a ponytail. Okay, I was going through it. And I didn't find in Shulchan Aruch that if a guy has a ponytail, you can't vetovel him. Right? It's not in there.
Cornrows are a problem, though.
Yeah, well, anything which is tight is going to be. I had that situation, too. I had a guy with very long hair, and it was matted. I told him he has to cut his hair because it's a chatzitza in the mikveh. So he did. It was fine. I understand. But that was not the case. He had straight hair, and it was kind of a short ponytail, but it was a ponytail. So one reason is that I didn't feel that it was a true barrier, and I knew him quite well, and I really felt he was sincere, and it's okay. You know, you don't have to have a black hat to convert.
But he had to release the ponytail to go in the mix.
Absolutely, which he did. I had another reason for doing it, though. My other reason is this. He was on a forward-moving track. I felt very confident that he's going to cut his own ponytail. The time will come. Mm-hmm. And it's better that he does it on his own than me telling him, cut your ponytail. Because whatever a person does on their own, it's real, it sticks, it's internalized. Whatever comes from the outside, it's a little different. I wanted him to get there on his own, if he would get there on his own. And I thought that's the right way. And he converted, and 4 months later, he didn't have a ponytail. Came to shul one day, no ponytail. I felt very good about it, because that's the way people grow. No, you can't do that with Shabbos. I can't say, okay, one day he'll keep Shabbos, right? Obviously, not going to do a Gerus like that, but this is tangential, right? That's one story. What's that?
Hashem also gives help to people who are growing.
For sure. And it didn't represent something, as I knew him personally, and as I keep saying, every case is different. It did not represent something in him that I felt was contrary to Yiddishkeit. It was his own thing. That was one story. Another story about the beauty of Gerus, which I'm always very, very moved by Gerus every single time. Never goes away. It's a beautiful thing. It's a powerful thing. That this person is going into the mikveh, and right now they don't have a Jewish neshama. And then the head goes under the water, and in an instant they have a Yiddish neshama. They walk into the mikveh Gentile. They come out of the mikveh a Jew. They have a neshama. That's what happens in the mikveh. You got a neshama. So I'm just, personally, I'm in awe of that. I'm in awe of that. It's just an amazing experience. So we did one Gerus, and the guy went down. It was a man under the mikveh water. And we're waiting for him to come up, which usually takes, 5 seconds. 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. He's under the water. He's under the water. And we're getting nervous. He's not coming up. So we're really ready in our, you know, rabbinic garb to go into that and pull the guy out. Then we saw like a few bubbles. So, okay, he's all right. And then it was a very, very long time. And he comes up out of the water like, like that. You know, so, okay, Mazel Tov, Baruch Hashem, beautiful, did everything, gave him his ksav. I came over to him afterwards and I said, if this is personal, you don't have to answer my question. I said, but I'm really very curious. I said, I've never seen someone stay under the water for that long. I said, would you mind telling me, like, what was going on, what was happening for you? So he says, Rabbi, I'll tell you. I said, okay. He said, you know, I come from a background of Muranos, which he did. His mother lit candles. He was from South America. I said, yes. He said, I'm the first person in my family in probably hundreds of years to have gone through a real conversion. The first person. And I was thinking when I was under the water about every single relative that I have. My aunt, he had a big family. My aunts, my uncles, my cousins, my nieces, my nephews, that every single one of them should do what I'm doing now. And I thought of each one of them, and then I came up. It's like beautiful, beautiful story. Yeah, if anybody wants to stay, really nice to meet you all, and then we can talk for a few more minutes. I can get some more questions. Let me go this way, okay? You didn't say anything, please. Uh-huh.